You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, John.
It is Wednesdays. We welcome you to your work week. As always, appreciate you tuning us in. Got a busy, busy Wednesday for you here as well, as we got a lot to discuss and get into. So let's get right into it and welcome you to the midway point of your work week.
Guess what day it is?
Guess what day it is?
It's hump day.
Hump day! I know you can hear me.
Let's get stupid.
Today's more about what that camera Wednesday hump day is. Over this.
All right, welcome to the show. It is May 8th. As we got a guy, Christian Clark's going to lead things off for us here. We'll talk a little Pelicans. Words of wisdom. And coming up at 12:15, Ralph Marlborough is going to join us an hour early than he normally does at 1:15. So he's going to join us at 12:15, 12:30. Well, after we talk Saints, we will discuss a thrilling win. If you're a UNO privateer, tough defeat if you're a Tulane Green Wave as they win last night in walk-off fashion. We'll talk to head coach Blake Dean at 12:45. We'll talk to head coach Corey Brown of Enola Gold to get back into action following a bye weekend. So, where are they? We'll ask coach that here as well. At 1:15, Fletcher Mackel will join us. And at 2:15, Sean Fox. Hour one is brought to you by No Wake Outfitters, your one-stop shop for all things fly fishing and over there on the Gulf Coast. 1926 Airline Drive in Metairie. NoWakeOutfitters.com is the way to go see what they're all about. The Ruderman Can caller and guest line is 800-998-1003 is the way to chime in. As we lead things off, or should I say tip things off, Mr. Christian Clark of The Advocate and The Picayune. Talk a little NBA and Pels and, discussion. Or kerfuffle. I don't know what happened with Willie Green and Brandon Ingram. We'll talk about that in a quick second. Christian, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, man. I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. So, Shams Charania of The Athletic yesterday, he's on his show over on FanDuel, and he said this.
The Pelicans learned that Zion Williamson is that guy. He's that guy that you can build around, and they intend to continue to do so. And for him, it's always been about health. That's the biggest factor. We saw it down the stretch of the season that hampered him. But Brandon Ingram, he'll be entering the last year of his contract at $36 million, one-time All-Star. They're going to have to see exactly how much they feel comfortable with, how much they feel like he's worth in a contract extension. But there were frustrations throughout Brandon Ingram as far as where he stood late in the playoffs, obviously sitting in one of the late games during the play-in tournament. And I'm told Ingram and Willie Green had an exchange at Game 2 in the locker room. Sources tell me Ingram essentially told Green he wanted the ball. He wanted Green to help him get the ball. And given how quiet Brandon Ingram is in nature, that direct approach with Green and how he spoke up toward the head coach, that obviously was a seminal moment in the locker room, something that did have a lasting impact since the end of the season. And that relationship is something to keep an eye on right now going into a very important summer for Ingram, for the Pelicans, as they decide how to dictate the future. And you have to give Brandon Ingram this credit. He did get out an injury late in the season, played through it, and he's shown over the course of his career in New Orleans that he can be a guy that can lead this team, and he can carry this team, especially when they play without Zion Williamson. But with him back and knowing that Zion Williamson, you build around a guy like that, what happens with Ingram's future, as well as CJ McCollum, if they are, as David Griffin said, going to look to get better and make changes?
All right, so Christian, that seems to be the theme this summer, right? When we look forward as to what do the Pels do, let's kind of dissect that. What do you make of what Sham said there? I saw you posted some videos, some stats, some things of that nature. End game two at halftime. Were there adjustments? Is there anything to that? Is that normal in a game to come up and say, hey, help me out and do that? Is there something more to that? What do you make of all this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was understandable that there were extreme frustrations. I mean, you know, the Pelicans offense was absolutely in the toilet in their first round series against the Thunder. I mean, during the regular season, the Pelicans scored 92 or fewer three times in 82 games. They never cracked 92 in all four playoff games. So it's understandable why there's a ton of frustration about the way things went offensively in the first round. I was trying to provide some context yesterday. I mean, Brandon Ingram really did not play a good game in that series. And after game one, Willie Green was asked, hey, like, Dort's up in his grill. You know, do you look to free him up? And Willie's message was basically like, look, Brandon has to do that a lot himself. Like, he has just got to be better about getting to the free throw line, dealing with that physicality. Mm-hmm. And Willie Green's message after game one was clearly, hey, Brandon's got to do a little bit better. And from what we heard from Sham Charania, from my buddy Schmidt to his Substack, you know, it sounds like Brandon Ingram was telling Willie Green, I need you to help me get there.
I go to the end of game four in a 17-minute, very open, I guess, post-game press conference from B.I., and he talked about communication specifically. He talked about there needs to be communication with him, the staff, and players if the big three are to work. I hear that. I hear this report. I kind of see that here as well. And look, there's been in the last 24 hours people either saying, reporting, or what they've heard and what I've been told too, that maybe my, I wouldn't say fear, but my observation of did this team change its identity maybe kind of did take place. Christian, did this team change their offensive approach at some point this season because of Brandon Ingram?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I think, first of all, when you just like look at the last 2 years, there's two kind of data points telling us, hey, when Zion's not in the lineup, the Pelicans offense not only struggles, like it's kind of been alarmingly bad. Mm-hmm. When Zion got hurt last year, the last 45 games, the Pelicans were 26th in offense, and this was still a team that had Brandon and TJ and Jonas Valanciunas, useful offensive pieces. I don't think there was really any reason why it should have been that bad. And then when you look at the playoffs this year, I mean, not even breaking 92 is a little bit alarming. So I think, you know, the Willie Green, the Pelicans, they have to, like, really ask themselves, why do we go to these peaks? Like, why are the lows so low offensively without Zion? I know it's not ideal playing without your best player.
Sure.
And to your point, I do think, you know, Brandon in there just changes the offense and the way it runs. I mean, he's a pretty deliberate player who loves taking mid-range shots, and he's very good. But, you know, you heard all the things the Pelicans tried to do coming into the season. Look, we want to play faster. We want to be getting up more threes. I don't think those are things that Brandon Ingram naturally does.
And I bring that up because, Christian, when we look at, and I've always wondered this, how much do you look at the postseason as an executive, as a coach, and go, okay, well, this is what we need to do, right? I mean, because we're looking right now at Minnesota up 2-0. We're looking at what OKC did last night. And again, maybe this is a recency bias, but one of the things I saw last night at the 3-minute mark when SGA and the starters were pulled, the very next possession by the entire reserves by OKC was a steal, three passes, corner three. Like, that's the style of ball that it is now. Minnesota and OKC are two defensive-minded teams that move the basketball, play as a unit defensively, and that goes back to the question I know you've brought up all season and now in the postseason. Fit. How That's the most important part. It's not even about talent, really, isn't it? It's more about fit and what branch, I guess, you build that tree around, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're just comparing, like, OKC and Minnesota to the Pelicans, I think they both those teams, one, have more talent, and two, the talent fits together better. So I think it's probably both of those things. But, yeah, like, OKC, I think, you know, it does fit together really well, and I think one of the reasons why is the center position. I mean, it's a lot of different things, but, like, they have this guy who allows you to play five out on offense and creates so many driving lanes for all your ball handlers and also is a rim protector. And I think that's one of the reasons why. And Minnesota, I mean, obviously they start Rudy Gobert in there, and he's not a guy who digs threes. But, you know, they'll go with Karl Anthony Towns at the five at times. They've got Naz Reid at the five. Like, they both have the option of going five out. The Pelicans, you know, don't really – like, they can't – it's really hard for them to go all shooting around Zion Williamson. But, I mean, I just think both those teams, OKC, Minnesota, you brought up, I mean, it's better talent and better fit, unfortunately.
Yeah. Christian, when you look at the other aspects that this team needs to do here as well, what's interesting, too, is it's stats, too. I know with James Borrego is probably going to be interviewed by some teams here as well that have some openings. I think we focus so much in the offseason roster moves that need to happen. Do you think anything happens on the bench where other coaches maybe get interviews somewhere else? Or, again, James Borrego is the name I brought up here as well.
Yeah, I think that's like a huge – one of the big questions of the offseason. Is James Borrego back next season? You know, there's a lot of ink spilled about, hey, you know, the Pelicans finished 20th in offense last year. They brought in Borrego, known as this offensive mind. He's going to be the team's offensive coordinator. Things will look better. They finished 11th. I think if you just, like, the eye test told you it just looked wonky out there a lot of times. We all know what happened in the playoffs. So I think James Borrego is a guy who wants to be a head coach again and, you know, will position himself to try to get a job going into next year. I have no idea if he will be able to or how, you know, that kind of will materialize or anything like that. But, yeah, I mean, it's a big question. Will he be back next year as the associate head coach?
So some questions, no doubt, to be resolved here in the near future. When you look at the teams in the West, I just kind of mentioned it, Christian, how much do you look at what Minnesota and OKC are doing here and knowing the teams that even didn't get into the postseason? You saw Victor Wembanyama win Rookie of the Year. Does that, you think, have to go into your way of building team? Like, am I trying to match up with those guys? Am I trying to match up with those teams? Or do you look at some of the things that they're doing and go, this is what exactly the Pels need to do? Or do we already know what the Pels need to do?
I think, first of all, they know they can't be complacent because they know they compete in just a brutal conference. I mean, the West was so difficult this year and it's not getting easier. I mean, you know, Memphis will be back next season. San Antonio will put guys around Wembanyama. Houston, like, they were frisky this year, and they're probably going to be tough again and continue to try to win. So they know they can't be complacent. I don't think you can look at any one opponent and be like, we should try to like, add pieces to match up better with them. Like, from my personal perspective, the way to approach it is, how do we fit the pieces better around Zion Williamson? I mean, he's the most talented player on the team. Showed he could stay on the court this year. I mean, I just think the pieces around Zion have been ill-fitting at times. I mean, I don't know if they can go out and get a stretch five, but, like, right. Milwaukee Bucks went from good to elite when they got that Brook Lopez piece and they were able to, you know, find that guy where they could go five out with. So I don't know if it's that. I don't know if it's doing something different at guard, but to me, this offseason is about we got to fit the pieces around Zion better.
Final thing for you, sir. I saw you put it up this morning, and I wanted to address it here as well. You've been one of those guys in the forefront trying to talk about the importance of a new TV deal for the Pelicans. They did that you know, what was it, a dozen games or so with Fox 8. How did that go?
Yeah, so there was seven games that aired on Fox 8 and then some other gray stations in the New Orleans domestic market area, and people really tuned in. I mean, if you just look at the average number of TV households who watched those seven games, it was a little more than 46,000, That was more than three times the number of average TV households who watched the 69 games the Pelicans put on Bally Sports this year. I mean, it's just a substantial slice of pie in terms of people who are watching when the games were free and over the air, as opposed to when they were on Bally. And I mean, like, when this, we all remember like JJ Redick's comment of like, oh, there's 12 Pelicans fans.
12 fans.
And I think, like, yeah, when you examine, well, why is this regarded as a place that doesn't have a very big fan base? There's just not a ton of people who are like watching on TV when it's on Bally Sports. Like, if you just think about it, 13,000 TV households in the New Orleans domestic market area were watching the Pelicans on a night-to-night basis. That's just not a very big number. And so I think whatever they do, they got to figure out a way to make the games a little bit more accessible and just get more eyes on the product.
100%. I think I couldn't agree with you more. That's the easiest way to grow your product. You have to be made available. And we've talked about this before, Christian, as we thank you for your time. It's, you know, you can watch a Saints game free. You can watch an NFL game free, one way, shape, or form. How it gets done, it's different ways. If it's on Amazon, if it's on ESPN, if it's a cable, a local station gets the opportunity to purchase it and put it over the airwaves. But you can grab an HD antenna and watch a Saints game. You should be able to do the same with your basketball team, right? Is it that simple?
Yeah, I mean, like, you really want to, like, look, they get a really nice chunk of change for the RSN deal, and that's kind of changing. I mean, I don't think they have to go over the air, but, like, if they are, you know, like, the streaming element has to work at minimum, right? The Bally Sports Plus streaming product is terrible, and so if they do, you know, stick with Bally Sports, and that's kind of like resuscitated by Amazon, and there's like a streaming component that you access through Amazon, like, I think I would anticipate that being like a much better product. Like, at minimum, you just have to have a streaming product that is actually reliable and works next season.
Well, there's no doubt about it, man. Thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it, Mr. Christian Clark. You can give a follow over there on Twitter at CClark_13 or X, whatever makes you feel good. Thank you, Christian. Appreciate the time, man. When we take a quick break, we will come back with Ralph Marbo. Let's hear from him, his thoughts as we go into OTA week and rookie minicamp for the New Orleans Saints. We'll talk about all that and more next on ESPN New Orleans.
They say that once you give him control, he'll own your brain forever. Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
800-998-1003. Zero Demand Can Caller and Guest Hotline Hour 1 is brought to you by New Wake Outfitters. Mr. Ralph Marbro, Saints Happy Hour Podcast. Joins us, sir. An hour early because you're busy. You got important things to do. Not nearly as important, though, as the social media people of the NFC South teams, especially in particular two that are off and running in OTAs, including the Falcons and the Buccaneers, your favorite time of the year where we get the extra super slow-mo video of Baker Mayfield dropping back the pass. Kirk Cousins hitting a screen pass. How excited are you?
To do what USC football did when they did their spring game and they dropped in Kendrick Lamar's Not Like Us over the top of they dropped in that over the top of the video and it made everybody giggle. That's what I need the Saints to do.
Okay. So when the Saints have their first OTA practice, right, when we get out there, that first Tuesday that we get a chance to go out there and see it, everybody pulls out their phone. I'm going to go to the Apple slow-mo cam. What is it you want me to capture? What is it that you want?
Here's what I need. I need slow-mo of Trevor Penning and ideally Trevor Penning and Fuaga, and you can like video each one separately, then cut it together and do split screen of both of them blocking air, but looking really confident. That's what I need from you, Gus.
So coming out of the stance, and then you'll see both palms come up and kind of like an air bench press. That's what you want. Okay.
That's what I need. Total confidence, Trevor Penning, footwork positive. Maybe even like that kind of like where he does like the half block on the guy.
Yeah.
Shifts him to nowhere. Yeah. I need that. But I'm going to tell you a quick mini camp story. When I was in college, right? the Saints hired Mike Ditka. And I was, I was like, Mike Ditka, Chicago Bears, this is great. So we went out to minicamp, and we watched the first one when they had Heath Shuler at quarterback. And you know, Gus, like 7-on-7 with the quarterback, like if the quarterback is remotely competent, the ball, it shouldn't touch the ground.
No.
And we're watching it. Heath Shuler goes incomplete, interception, scramble for 10, scramble for 10. And my friend Trent, who was with me, when we went to high school with, mm-hmm. he turns to me and goes, I don't think this is how 7-on-7 should bleepity bleep bleep look. I think this is bad.
No. Yeah. If the ball is hitting the field a lot during 7-on-7, that team is in a lot of trouble. I mean, it should not be complicated. I just sent you the video. I failed to mention the Panthers also. Since if you got a new coach, you can start a week early. So that's why they're out there actually practicing. There's Bryce Young. Look at that video. I just sent it to you. It's beautiful. It starts out of focus, then focuses behind his right shoulder, and all you see him is throw it deep. And then some receiver, I don't, who is that? Is that Thielen? Who is that? 19. I don't know. There it is. Look, he caught it. It looks like a good 40 yards down the field. How beautiful is that? We're so close to watching Derek Carr do what? What is the first video you think we're going to see of Derek Carr?
I think we need Derek Carr doing like a play action. And if we really want to like just inject the hopium into our veins,
okay,
we need A.T. Perry making a contested catch against Kool-Aid McKinstry. So then we can be like, A.T. Perry is ready to break out year two. And Kool-Aid McKinstry was right in position to make the play. That's just A.T. Perry. That's just him being great. Kool-Aid's fine. We got two gems. Like, that's merely the dream scenario for me besides offensive line. So I can get excited about Perry.
Excited.
And I can get excited about Kool-Aid. See, it's all just hopes and dreams. We're just building like a cake.
Yeah.
Gus, we're just adding ingredients to our whole
Well,
cake.
Go ahead and keep that excitement going as we will see Fuaga, McKinstry, Rattler, Bub Means, uh-huh. Jalen Ford, and Christian Boyd, along with Ezarim. That's your rookie class, the undrafted rookie class. Remember, the greatest tight end signing of all time in the undrafted rookie class from Colorado State. So we're looking forward to all of that, in all honesty, because, again, here come the photos and the videos this weekend, rookie minicamp. Who are you most excited to read about?
Selfishly, like Rico Payton. Like, he just has the name of a villain from Breaking Bad. So, like, if he would succeed at corner, that could be fun. They gave him a lot of money comparative to, like, UDFAs. They guaranteed him, I think, over $200,000, so they really like him. But I can't remember, like, the last UDFA corner that, like, in anywhere in the NFL that ended up being, like, really, really good, because teams usually just draft those guys. But Rico Payton would be fun. The punter, to me, is really interesting.
Vandy.
Gus. Okay. And I don't know if we count him. I don't know if we count him as a UDFA because he's not like a rookie college guy, but the kicker from Ireland, right?
Oh, okay.
I think the Saints, like the kicker and the punter, the UDFAs, like both of them, I don't think Groupie and Headley are like locked in and super secure at their jobs, right? I could see either one of them or both of them losing their jobs.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting. That's something we won't know until the game starts. But I think the thing is with the punter and the kicker, we may sort of know like if they have potential. You get the tweet from like Underhill or Cat Terrell where they're like, hey, I timed the hang time on the punter.
Oh yeah.
It was amazing.
No doubt.
And the kicker was 6-for-6. Like I think you can kind of you don't know who's gonna win, but you kind of start to tell like, you know, these guys have a shot. And I think that's something interesting to watch because listen, the kickoff rules are new, and the Saints special teams have been elite under Rizzi, and they lost a lot of guys on special teams.
Yeah.
And they need, like, if the Saints are going to win and they're going to be a 9-10 win team again, like, they need to dominate on special teams because we know on offense with offensive line and different things, like, they need to be great at special teams again, even better. So that's one thing I'm interested in. I'm going to be paying attention.
I must have fired either a tweet or a text to you once a game where, like, can we punt the ball further than 30 yards? I mean, can we please just punt the ball further than 30 yards? I always felt like we didn't do that as a team. One of the things that I think will be interesting, too, is because you know everything's going to get charted. Spencer Rattler, what if he goes, you know, like, I don't know, 22 for 23 in the entire weekend, no incompletions, those are do we have a quarterback controversy?
I mean, I think Haener and Rattler is really interesting because here's the thing, Gus.
I mean, it's a real battle.
Saints, it's a real battle, and here's the thing. Say whatever you want about either one. The Saints, they can't cut either one because I'm telling you, if either one of them gets cut, a team's going to claim them because I know, for instance, the Rams reportedly really like Haener. There's going to be a team out there that's going to say, we had the third round grade on Spencer Rattler. He's not getting through waivers. They'll just claim him. Same with Haener. So it becomes really interesting with the Saints. Keeping threes easier with the new rules, right? But it's going to be really, to me, fascinating. And I love it because, Gus, it gives us a reason to care about the preseason game, right? Because before it'd be like, stars aren't playing, whatever. But now it's like, hey, how many quarters is Haener going to get? How many reps is Rattler going to get? So it's really interesting. I think Spencer Rattler is going to look amazing in the minicamp because he's just got the talent in minicamps. Like you say, the ball never took the ground. Right. I predict Spencer Rattler hype
off the chart. Exactly. You're going to be sitting there Sunday morning enjoying Mother's Day. And while everybody's, you know, pampering on the moms and you're waiting for the food, and you're going to be scrolling. I'm with you. You're going to be scrolling about how great Spencer Rattler was on Friday and Saturday. I got two more minutes here for you. I want to ask you this sincerely, though, because I do think this is a topic for me. And I think it's a theme over the next 4 or 5 weeks once we start getting to OTAs. Attendance. I'm going to go in particular with, like, say, Alvin Kamara. Like, I mean, look, I just showed you, and I just said, I've seen video of Kirk Cousins throwing in a Falcon helmet at practice. Baker Mayfield yesterday. Joe Burrow is throwing yesterday. I don't not think, and I just sent you Bryce Young. I don't not think that Derek Carr is not going to be there, right? But when you have a new offensive staff, like, should it be 100% attendance in terms of skill players? And I'm kind of referring to Kamara. I mean, Olave. Like they have to be there, right?
It is because, listen, Gus, for the first time since 2005-ish, right, the Saints are installing a new offense, right? I mean, like, Pete Carmichael, he didn't run the offense as well as Sean Payton, whatever. But the playbook was the same, right? And with Kubiak, completely different. So I think attendance is kind of more, you know, it's not life and death, but it would be nice. And to me, the Saints need it because the thing is, Gus, you don't know how this schedule for the NFL, you don't know how it's going to lay out. It may lay out where we look at the schedule and it may be difficult the first 4 or 5 weeks, or we may say, like, oh, you got Carolina, you know, you got Carolina and the Giants and the Raiders. Like, you better be making hay, Dennis Allen. So, like, you better hit the ground running and beat these bad teams. So, like, I think you're right. I think it's very critical because it's a whole new world on offense.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask you the final thing here in the final 30 seconds. Who do you want the Saints to start? It's a week from today. It's official. The NFL will release the schedule 1 week from today. So next Wednesday when we talk, it will be at night, of course. But who do you want the Saints to start and close the season with?
Oh, I think you always want, if possible, to start and close with the Falcons.
I was going to say the same thing.
You get all summer to just make fun of them. And, like, if you close with the Falcons, something will be on the line for either of those teams.
Yeah.
But, Gus, I'm going to make a prediction for you. I think the opening game for the Saints, either the first – it's going to be Monday night. It's going to be the first or second game of the doubleheader, which I think that the NFL does now. Broncos at home. Because the Saints Broncos.
Oh, you got to go. Broncos. Sean's welcome home parties, the first game? Oh, man.
This is a game where if you put it later in the year on prime time on a Thursday night, it's just a sad Thursday night game
where
Al Michaels is asleep because both teams are bad.
That's a good point.
You got week one.
Oh.
It's any good.
That's a good point.
You got all this hype. You saw Monday night. I think the first or second game for the Monday night doubleheader, Broncos at Saints. I mean, that's my prediction.
At Saints Forecast is the way to follow Mr. Ralph Marlborough, Saints Happy Hour Podcast. That's a good one. I love that. Saints fans, where you open up the phone lines in hour number two. Thank you, Ralph. Appreciate the phone call. When we come back, we'll throw that out there here as well. Blake Dean next. Corey Brown of the NOLA Gold at 12:45 and in open phone lines. Who do you want the Saints to start out and close with? The NFL schedule a week from today. Marlborough says, give me Sean Payton on a Monday night, week one. Sports Hangover continues next at ESPN New Orleans.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
800-998-1003 is the Rudiman Can caller and guest hotline. Tuesdays, we talk college baseball. I always thank Jay Ullman, Mike Silva, and Mr. Blake Dean. Except sometimes he's a little busy. Then he has to go play a game, and then we're going to talk about that game. So we're going to do that here on this Wednesday. Head coach of the Privateers joins us. Sir, good afternoon to you. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I think you're in a good mood. Or is it more of a kind of a sigh? Really, that game was incredible last night. Going into extras, you guys walk it off in the 10th and win 6-5.
Yeah, it's just at this point in the season, it's been long. I think it was just like, oh, sigh of relief. Thank God. I'd like to have one where I can at least relax a little more, but it's always nice to get wins at the end of the day.
That doesn't happen. I got a game at 6 o'clock. I've been nervous last night into this morning. And I'm 7 and 8 year olds little league, Blake. I'm nervous already about it. But look, since we last talked, let's talk about your team. You guys took on Southern Miss. You lose a 1-run game right there, though. Then you go to the weekend, win a run game, lose 14-7 and come back and win Sunday 7-5. So you win the series. And then you win a 1-run game yesterday. You guys starting to figure out how to do that, and is that a sign of your team growing and maturing?
I think so. I think the key to it is we're starting to get some arms back. I know it's late, but we've been battling fatigue and injury on the mound all year prior to the season even starting. We're getting some guys back. Chris Olivier is making some more appearances, getting himself back. Bryce Callaway, actually last night, our first baseman, hit the big 3-run homer and then came in through the final two innings of the game. And, so some of our arms are getting back where we need to get them. And I think we're playing pretty good ball. We're just trying to stay healthy. We're a little beat up, which is expected, but just trying to, push our way to the end here.
What do you remember about that series over the weekend against Southeastern where you guys were able to pick up two wins? What stood out to you?
It's tough to win over there. I mean, it really is tough to win over there. They've done a good job of, building a good fan base and culture. They're very similar. It's obviously at a smaller magnitude, but similar to like an LSU, right? Everyone knows going to Alex Box Stadium, the crowd and the atmosphere plays into the, a ton of their momentum and energy in life, and kind of the same thing over there. It's Barbier's first year over there, so new head coach, and they're trying to, get it ironed out how they want it. And you just go over there but again, the atmosphere doesn't change. Those guys get a little rowdy. They're right on top of you. Yeah, they can hear everything. So it definitely plays into their hand a little bit.
Yesterday almost seemed like a tale of two games at the midway point, huh? You guys are down 5-1 at the end of three, and you guys score 5 runs in the final three frames, including that extra inning in the 10th. What was the biggest difference, you think, between the start and finish of that game?
Extra base hits. I'm a believer in that. I will talk about it until the day it's over with. In baseball, if you hit doubles and you hit home runs, you score runs at a higher clip. Now, if you look at it, we had the same amount of hits they had through the first couple innings. Well, they had 5 runs, and we had 1, which was basically given to us in the first inning. So they had hit 2 home runs. They had the big grand slam right there. So when you look up and look at it, extra base hits are, to me, what rule the game of baseball from an offensive standpoint. And then at the end, we get a guy on, gets a big home run, and then again, Sonier hits the double to walk it off. So extra base hit is the right time to me, or what decides most games.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, obviously, especially on those midweek games, Coach, you're going to go to a lot of arms, right? Johnny Holstaff, things of that nature. What about the job you guys did on the mound after giving up 5 runs there in the third to not give up any more runs?
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. I mean, it gave us a chance to win the ball game. I don't think we'd give up a hit the rest of the game. You know, so it definitely gave us an opportunity there to, we weren't doing too much offensively. Their starter did a really good job of keeping us off balance and pretty much was running the show for quite a while. And then again, it just takes one or two things. And the way that wind was blowing out there last night, you get a ball in the air, anything's possible. So that's exactly what happened.
Look, obviously the timely hits, the extra base hits, but I saw on some of the highlights you guys posted on social media too. You had some catches there, huh? You got a diving catch, a catch on the wall. Your defense came to play yesterday.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. So Yusechi is usually my catcher, the guy I put in left field. Right. He made the pretty spectacular catch early. I mean, and you look at it up in the ninth inning, I've got three third basemen playing the infield. My catcher is now moved to first. I think we had one guy left on the bench, you know, so we were just pulling out all the stops we could. But Sanford made a really good diving catch in right center field, which, you know, he's really talented and really good college baseball player. So, again, to win those type games and to have some special things happen, sometimes they require a little bit more than an ordinary play.
Hmm. Have you ever been in a situation where you didn't have anybody on the bench to go to?
I don't know if I've quite emptied the shelf that far. I typically leave one in the rafters there in case I need them, you know, in case it gets a little hairy. But it was all over. Then my DH, or my pitcher, or my first baseman came into the game to pitch, so it killed my DH. So it was a mess. I was like, God, we got to score, quick.
Yeah, no doubt. I brought up yesterday too. When we were talking about the games yesterday, that's your lone home game. We talked about this last week, too. You're in this weird stretch, right? You have a lot of games on the road here. You're going back on the road this weekend in Northwestern State. Next Tuesday will be at Southern before finally finishing the regular season at home against Lamar. But you guys have handled the road pretty good so far this season, huh?
I think we've done an okay job. You know, I think like anything else in college baseball now, and then it's not college baseball, it's these kids' lives. You can see some inconsistencies up and down across college baseball. You know, it's like, oh, this team's in last place, and next thing you know, they go over here and sweep this team. Oh, this team's in first place, and they go get swept. It's just, you know, I don't know nowadays. Heck, I mean, I'm sure playing at home is a little more advantageous, and I'd always like to play at home, but again, I just see matchups as we go into this stuff. You look at it, like A&M, for example. Oh, they're the hottest team in the world. Coming in LSU, boom, get smoked 2-3, right? So, you know, it's the right teams and the right matchups. And, heck, you got to figure out which kids show up what days. You don't know what personality, who you're going to get from day to day.
Final thing for you, Coach. Northwestern State, what kind of team are you going to be expecting to face this weekend?
Well, again, a team where, you know, they got a new coach, you know, who was assisted there, obviously, but and with the portal, a lot of their guys got rated, and then, you know, that you look up and their overall record to start the year and throughout most of the year has been very average. But then you look up and heck, they're right sitting in fourth place or fifth place right there in the conference, playing really well. Played LSU to the wire last night. So again, a team that's hungry and they got some new people there. They're playing with energy and in their ballpark. So, and it's Mother's Day weekend, so we'll have our hands full.
Coach, appreciate the time, man, for joining us. I know it's a lot during the week, but I just want to keep in tabs with what you guys doing. And the season's about to run out here, and then it's conference tournament time. So every single game and weekend's important. Thank you for your time today.
Yep, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having us, buddy.
Yep, for sure. Head coach Blake Dean of the UNO Privateers. Go give them a follow on the school's athletic website, unoprivateers.com, and, of course, Privateers BSB over on social media. Got a few minutes here before we hit the break. We're going to bring in Corey Brown, head coach of the NOLA Gold. They're looking to get back on the winning side of things as they've been struggling to kind of put the first and second halves together. We'll talk to Coach here in a quick second. But it is kind of one of the questions I'm going to throw out there here. And, again, coming up at 1:15, we'll speak with Fletcher Mackle. We'll ask him. And then also Sean Fox at 2:15. Rest of the way, it is open, very guest heavy at the very beginning. But we'll reset things again at 1:00. Pels fans, what do you make of what Shams said yesterday on his show? That, you know, there was B.I. went to Willie Green game two, like, help me get open. After game one, Willie was like, no, it's on you, kind of. Is that a thing or not? We've seen several people that cover the team in the last couple of days or last couple of hours post stats, you know, of with screens, without screens, changing of the offense, things of that nature. Somebody I saw on social media said, hey, look, they scrapped the offense midseason. They brought in James Borrego, run this style of offense. And then B.I. was like, nope, we're going to do the things that we did without Zion last year. It worked. And I've heard that from a couple of people. And it probably lead, or that's probably why I felt, and I said on the air, for the last month of the season, I felt like the last month and a half of the season, I felt like this was a completely different team, identity-wise, right? Less Jonas, more Larry Nance. It just felt different. It felt different watching this team. I clearly, several times, was looking at the conductor, Chris Moran, across from me, in the studio, and I'm like, I don't know who this team is. The ball's not moving. It's very odd. So, if that's Brandon Ingram saying this is the way things should go because it feels this way, is that then the answer to, well, who fits and who doesn't? And I only bring that up because Christian brought up the fact of who are these players, right? Brandon Ingram's not a three-point volume shooter. He's not a three-point shooter at all. He's a guy that likes to dribble the ball and stuff. He adjusted his game to be more of the assist guy. You don't want him to be your assist leader. He led the team in assists this year. That's not what you want. So when you look at all of this, you look at CJ McCollum. He needed to improve his three-point shooting. He set the franchise record in three-point shots made last year. So it's interesting because when you start thinking of fit and you start hearing reports like this, isn't that where you go then? Who fits better because it is Zion that you have to build around? And I understand, like I brought up yesterday, my buddy at the Lake House this weekend. He's like, Gus, but he hasn't been in the postseason in 5 years. We're going on year six, he hasn't played him. I understand. But your eyes do not deceive you. When you put on the game and you watch a game, one of those three players that you're paying max money to can change the game by himself. And that's Zion. So we'll talk more about that in hour two here as well. Plus, with the Saints fans, who do you want to start out with? Ralph Marlborough. Did he just give Todd indigestion? He wants Sean Payton and the Denver Broncos week one in the Dome. And Coach Corey Brown next of Enola Gold on ESPN New Orleans.
Have some stones.
Believe me, he is no wuss.
His legend lives on.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
All right, let's talk to head coach Corey Brown, head coach of your Enola Gold. As always, appreciate the time. Coach, how are you today, sir?
I'm very good. How are you doing?
Doing well. Another bye week, second one of the season. How did you approach it? What was the message and what was the main intent here for you guys?
Yeah, so firstly, it was around just making sure that everyone refreshed and recovered. But then we had three really good gym sessions and training sessions. So everyone had a fitness test to do when they got in on Monday, and the results were really good compared to the last bye week, which was really encouraging. So that was good.
I think one of the things that you look at here too, Coach, is you look at where I guess your team sort of sits here. Where do you see the Gold right now here at the midway point of the season?
Yeah, I guess if you look at results-wise, around four wins, four losses, we've played some really good rugby, and then there's been patches in some of the second half, or some of our discipline has caused us to be a little bit inconsistent. So we're probably, you know, I guess if you look at 4-4, that's probably where we are.
Mm-hmm.
We had a number of red cards and suspensions and a few injuries. So the positive bit of that is that we actually haven't put our, you know, one of our best sides out in the eight games that we've played. So that's going to be really encouraging over the next week. We've got guys coming back from suspension. We've got guys coming back from injury. So there's a lot of competition in the squad, and that's going to really hopefully push us through to into the end of the season, into the playoffs.
Coach, that's what I was going to ask you when you kind of break down that last four-game stretch here as well. Do you think it was more of a meeting up and matching up talent-wise with other teams, or is it kind of that dreaded phrase that coaches and fans don't like to hear, self-inflicted wounds?
Yeah, it was probably a combination. I thought we actually played really well against San Diego and probably could have come away with the win there, which would have been a great win for us. We didn't quite get that done in the second half. So that was a frustrating performance. The other times where we didn't quite perform at our best, so I don't think our mindset or our attitude was quite right. So once we got that right and we wanted to see better actions against Anthem, although they were, you know, I wouldn't say they're struggling, they're actually a good young side. You know, we sort of got back to our game, carried really well, got over the game line, and then were able to play some good rugby. So it was probably just a bit inconsistent in these last four games is probably what I'm trying to say.
So that consistency, right? I mean, you guys can show film, talk to it as a staff. How much of that is kind of a player captain-led sort of way as well to kind of turn things around?
Yeah, I guess that's the beauty of rugby, and that's what we try to do. We try to get our leaders aligned with the coaches and how we're trying to play, and then get everyone on the same page and then everyone to drive that. In a couple of the games, we didn't quite have our mindset and attitude right, so we've spoken about that as a group and making sure that we, you know, we whatever we do, that we do it together, we're on the same page, and we get that right first. So if we can get that attitude, mindset right, then we'll be able to go out and perform and play well.
One of the other things I've been meaning to ask you too as well, because, I mean, obviously games ebb and flows, first half to second half. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that can sort of change in there as well. And you've been referencing it here a couple of times too, and I know Ryan, when we talked to him last week, red cards and things of that nature. Look, trust me, no one likes officiating here in New Orleans, NBA or NFL. So the fact you're bringing it up, we'll throw MLR here as well as in that. But when you look back at those red cards and you look back at those situations, I don't know, is it a composure thing? Is it a... Are you really calling that a red flag thing? Like, what's the fine line between that, and can you tell the difference?
Yeah, it's probably around a little bit of frustration from an individual. They make a decision, and then it's probably the wrong decision, or they just execute that thing that they do a little bit wrong. Look, it is Major League Rugby is a little bit frustrating around some of the officiating. But, you know, the game can't go ahead without them, so we've got to work with them. We've got to try and not get frustrated by some of those decisions and take those things that are out of our control and control those controllable things. So staying calm and positive and just trying to not get frustrated in the game is not as easy as it says. Yeah. It sounds.
No, I can understand. Well, look, does it help to have the next two games here at home?
Yeah, it definitely does. And look, the two teams that come from, well, this weekend at Seattle and then next weekend Utah, like, I don't think they've been training in, you know, over 20 degrees in the last 4 or 5 months. So they're going to struggle with the heat, and hopefully they do struggle with the heat. But it's also hard on our guys, you know. So we're doing all those things that we need to around eating well, hydrating, recovering well and getting our temperature under control and things. So we're working on that all during the week. We've made a couple shifts in our training sessions and schedule to hopefully that'll help. So look, there's lots of things we can do, but hopefully they come down and struggle in the heat more than we do.
Yeah, no, I hear you. See what takes place here, coaches. You guys will kick this one off at 2 o'clock this Saturday, and then on the 18th, it's a 7 o'clock game. So you guys will be playing under the lights. Hopefully, no more termites, though. You have termites over there down under
New Zealand? No, we've certainly got a few bugs, but no, we don't have the type of bugs you've got here.
Right? They're just annoying. At least they don't bite you, right? I mean, I think you have more biting bugs down there than we do.
Not so much in New Zealand, but in Australia they do. Yeah, we don't in New Zealand.
New Zealand sounds like a wonderful place. I keep trying to get Ryan to let us go do a talk show over there next time you want to go do that, you know?
Yeah, and it's a beautiful country.
I love you, man. That's awesome. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, Coach. We'll see you on Friday. We'll be out there again every single Friday before the gold take to the pitch. We'll bring the Sports Hangover over there. So I will see you again on Friday. We'll do this again.
Awesome. We'll see you on Friday. Right. Cheers, mate.
Sounds good. Bye. That is head coach Corey Brown. As always, Jimmy, thank you. We appreciate you giving us a call here on the Rudiman Can caller hotline and guest line. Sir Jimmy, how are you today? Hello, Jimmy.
Hello?
Hey, buddy.
Hello?
Yeah, man.
Hey, buddy. All right. Hey, two things really quick. Want to hear your response. You know, you remember when Tom Benson was alive and New Orleans Voodoo was here and all that stuff. I remember those crowds at the arena being bigger than a Pelicans crowd. Now, I'll parlay that, tie that into asking you the question of what's going on with the Louisiana Voodoo. At first, they were supposed to be based out of Lake Charles, then Lafayette, I think they played a game about a week and a half ago on a Saturday night. They won. They didn't play at the Cajun Dome. They played at some kind of like older little civic center in Lafayette. And now they're canceling games and reshuffling things. Like, what's going on? Because I think that the Arena Football League, if done right, could do very well in this state, in this city, in New Orleans. We've seen that in the past. But then you kind of got this, like, low-grade situation where they're having issues, it sounds like, with travel expenses. People are canceling. The product on the field is not, you know, a minor league for the NFL. It's like guys just who played maybe. You know, and it's sad. I know John Forkey is involved.
Yeah, he's over there right now. That's why we haven't seen him on Thursday.
Yeah, he's going all in, and I'm sure he's putting that sweat equity in. You got the beer man Lewis from some Saints of Legends involved, you know. And then it's just like, and then my other question is there any truth to all this stuff with Willie Green and Brandon Ingram? And look, I don't think, I mean, is this Brandon Ingram's way of saying, like, look, it's not my fault. It was the scheme. I'm a good player who deserves a max contract. And I hear the fans, because a lot of fans, I'd say over 50% now, Gus, are saying, no, don't pay him max money. He's a good player, but he's not an alpha male. He's not Zion, albeit he's got his issues. But give me the updates on the Louisiana Voodoo. What's going on with that dumpster fire? And what's going on? You think Ingram is kind of just saving face with this whole deal, blaming Willie Green and whatever this story is that they had a fight. You know,
it wasn't a fight. It was a little shouting match or yelling match or just a discussion. I'll play again at the top of the hour. And again, I'll reset it for everybody who wants to kind of go over it and see what they were talking about here. But it essentially breaks down to after game one, right? Willie Green was like, Brandon Ingram's got to, get open, essentially. And in game two, they... he didn't score. He didn't do very well. And then at halftime, this is when Shams was saying, this is when Brett Ingram went up to Willie Green and said, hey, look, help me. And they ran more screens. They did different things to it. So it did help in that aspect of it. One of the things that we'll get into here, and again, we'll play, and I played it yesterday, what Brandon Ingram said specifically, and I thought it was interesting after the game on... that game four loss when the series was over, 17 minutes he spoke. And when he was asked about the big three, can it work? And communication was said several times. So you take that with the reports from Shams, who's, him and Woj. You have the Woj bomb and whatever they call Shams when he does the breaking news. They literally battle it out. I think it's a little bit of everything, Jimmy, if that makes sense. I absolutely do think that, and I think it's positive on both sides from this aspect of it. If you're Brandon Ingram and his agent, you absolutely want to make sure and have no doubt that people, when they do like you or want to trade for you or want to resign you, it's for the max. No one's ever going to say, nah, don't give me the max. They're going to ask for the max. Now, whether or not they get it or you give it to her or you offer, it's a different story. But he's absolutely going to get the max, or he wants to want the max, that is. So anything that comes out of that way works, right? Was it scheme? Well, maybe this function. Well, the team is wrapped around, they're committed to Zion and not me. Maybe this doesn't work. Sure, that's going to be speculative. You're going to see people speaking on behalf on either side. Or is it on the other side where, hey, it just doesn't work. It doesn't fit. It doesn't work with the person that we want the offense to go to. And I also do think it's part of what you and other people have called throughout the season here as well. Willie's adjustments, Willie listening, how much input does he have? How much input did James Borrego had? How much input does David Griffin have? You have David Griffin saying, we believe that, Jordan Hawkins is going to be a wonderful keystone piece, a player that can really change the way this team plays. Then why didn't you play him? So... I mean, there's a lot to that as to why this up, but I am very confident in now saying, it's the last 24 hours, my eyes didn't deceive me. When I came on the show and said, why do I feel like this team's changed its identity? Well, they did. Apparently, they just scrapped the offense that they had been working on most of the season and tried to refigure it out, go back to the way things were. Well, it didn't work. So, yeah. Weird time to do it, by the way, towards the end of the season. 800-998-1003, hour one's in the books. It was brought to you by No Wake Outfitters. Hour two is coming up next on ESPN New Orleans.
Join us for the Louisiana Bullets and Balloon Fest on Friday, May 17th and Saturday, May 18th at the Oak Ridge Community Park in Golden Meadow. Get ready for hot air balloon race, tethered balloon rides, live music, auto show, local craft vendors, great Cajun food, games, and so much more. Kicking off the BandFest lineup